Extra, extra, read all about it.
RandomChatter.com presents...
Agent Carter, you are going to run S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agent Carter of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
I go to work.
With your hosts, Directors Shepard and Stolte.
You boys play nice.
I have orders for Agent Carter.
Calling all junior agents of the Strategic Scientific Reserve, it's now time for Agent Carter of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, brought to you by Breathem Breath Mints. Breathem is an effective, temporary breath neutralizer. And remember, Breathem is esteemed in social and business circles, recommended for speakers, singers, actors, and radio entertainers. Dignify the breath, sweet as a baby's. I'm Station Chief Shepard.
And I'm Station Chief Stolte.
And today we're bringing you the continuing adventures of Peggy Carter as she fights for truth, justice, and equal pay. Join us each and every week as we marvel at Agent Carter and show that we're in the know. So we're back after a, well, after I just said we'd join us each and every week, and we were off last week, but we're back now each and every
each,
week.
Each and almost every week.
Yeah, yeah. So we had an interesting episode this week, and we will be running the rest of the episodes all the way through February here until Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back online. So I will be looking forward to the rest of these.
We're halfway through.
We're halfway through. They need to. They really need to pick up the pace. I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure exactly where they're going here, but they need to finish up.
Yeah, something. I think they were. I mean, they've got some good action here and there, but if they're going to have kind of an end game, I think you're right.
Yep, and I will say that one of my suppositions from the last episode looks like it's paying out, so we will discuss that here. We will also be discussing some of the other characters and things that happened in this week's episode, but before we do that, Josh, why don't you go ahead and tell us what is this episode that we are discussing this week.
Well, this was episode 4 from our mini-season here, The Blitzkrieg Button. Yeah. And it aired on January 27th, 2015. It was written by Brant Engelstein. Engelstein? I probably messed that up.
Yeah.
Sorry, Brant. I apologize. And of course, it was directed by Stephen Craig. So, hey! Oh,
so why don't you just go ahead and get started talking about this episode.
Let's go. Hey, oh, let's go. Hey, oh, let's go. Start hardening the laundry bin. Well, the agents are attracting him. So Agent Carter has to get the Blitzkrieg button.
And that's amazing. I did not know the Ramones were from England, but that's cool.
You didn't? No, it was just, you know, it just flows, you know, from when you sing.
It was like the Clash sings Blitzkrieg Bop.
It was the Clash Moans. All right.
The Clash Moans. That was inspired, though. It really was. Very nice.
Thank
job.
You. Thank you very much. There's a little bit more. Not to the song, thank goodness. But, you know, since Howard Stark is living as a fugitive in Agent Carter's pure and womanly apartment building, he's got to send our heroine Peggy to steal back one of his inventions from SSR. Now, he says it's an EMP. With enough power to put New York back in the Stone Age. Age. But, of course, she gets it. You know, she's that good. But once she acquires it, she trusts her instincts and Jarvis's horrible lying ability. And she opens it. And she only discovers inside is a vial. Which I guess is good. Otherwise, New York wouldn't have any power. But
yeah.
Now, the future owner of a very black eye given to him by a woman scorned, Howard, has confessed to her that in the vial is none other than Steve Rogers' blood. Hmm. Now, while all this is taking place in a dramatic fashion, Dooley, he goes to Germany to interview a former Nazi, well, I guess current Nazi, currently imprisoned Nazi, and he's trying to find Stark. Also, Thompson, he's left behind, you know, back at SSR, and he interrogates some hobos, you know, to track down whoever was on the boat, the,
Heartbreak.
What was that boat called? Heartbreak, right, that,
yeah.
I knew it had a heart in it. Sousa, he comes even a little bit closer to discovering that Peggy might just have a second job.
I'm really concerned. I mean, I'm interested to see the process that, you know, they're going through trying to track this woman down, and it's good that, you know, Sousa's got that. I kind of course, would hate to have this come to light. You know, I think that's the whole point. You know, we're not supposed to want them to find her, but it's interesting watching them try to figure it out.
It is. I kind of want Sousa to find her, though, and like, and just nobody else.
Right. I think that, yeah, I think there may be a reveal that he figures it out, but then he also has some other information and decides not to share who the blonde was. Or maybe by that point it's not going to matter. I also, there's part of me that feels like that may just be, you know, it's like all a wild goose chase kind of thing. And that's kind of what they're, you know, they're occupying our time with, you know, oh, they're trying to hunt down Stark and stuff. But there's, I feel there's got to be something else going on in the background. It's just kind of like with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we just don't seem to have enough information to kind of put all the pieces together. But we can get to talking about all that here in just a second. Let me just give a brief piece of news. We did see a news story this last week about a three-pack of 6-inch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., well, Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. action figures, including Philip Coulson, Nick Fury, and Maria Hill. And Coulson comes with the giant gun from Avengers and two different heads, one with glasses and one without. And I was wondering if he had a little stack of Captain America trading cards inside his coat there. I can't tell.
But I think he'd have to come with two different torsos in that case.
Yeah. So those are pretty cool. So they those will be out later in the year from Toys R Us for about $50. $50 for three figures. That's a lot.
Wow.
But I guess they are 6 inches. So they are. What are the Star Wars 6-inch figures going for?
Oh, I'm sad to say they're going for 20.
Yeah. So this is just a good deal for three packs.
If maybe they'll do what they did with the Star Wars figures and offer the what is it, like a 24-inch. Or 30-inch, something like that. Those are only like $15.
Yeah. I think it's like a 30 or 32-inch action figure. So,
oh, jeez.
Wouldn't you like a big, tall Coulson to put on your desk?
I actually would. I think I'd put him in my window when I'm at work. I'd just leave him in my house, you know, just standing there, standing guard.
I've got a bobblehead for him, and, you know, that's only, what, like 4 inches tall. So that works pretty well.
Is he intimidating?
He is kind of intimidating. It's funny because I have a 8-inch Hellboy action figure next to this little teeny Coulson, and Coulson, I think, can stare Hellboy down. It's not even a contest there. So,
Well, of these figures, it looks like Maria Hill is almost a bobblehead.
Her jaw's a little broad, isn't it?
I don't know. You know what? They're kind of stylized, and I don't have a problem with that. They are pretty cool. I like them.
It is interesting, though, that they are getting a female action figure. I've seen a lot of posts recently about where are all the female toys for the Marvel Universe. You know, there's Maria Hill is on a few things. Black Widow has been represented a little bit. Gamora is slowly coming out. You know, there's no Agent Carter stuff. In all the Age of Ultron toys that have been previewed, there's no Black Widow or Scarlet Witch figure yet, which, you know, it's
we could talk about this for a long time, but I just feel like they're missing out on an opportunity. I think they're doing it because they think they won't sell, but I think they're missing out on an opportunity. I think they're wrong.
And the same stuff has happened with Star Wars figures too. I know that in my lifetime of collecting those, you know, it's taken a while for some of the female figures to come out, but and some of them do sit on the pegs. I mean, you know.
Well, and I know that, you know, we grew up in a different time, not that long ago, but as a kid, when you had the figures, did you have the girl figures? Did you have the Princess Leia figures?
I had 4 Princess Leia figures.
Yeah, I wanted them. I wanted them as part of my collection. It never even occurred to me that, oh, these are girls.
Yeah,
so I don't know. I think they're missing out on
it. Yeah, because it wasn't like they were Barbies. Like, I don't know that I would have been playing with a Barbie, but, you know, you get an action figure, and because who else is Han going to kiss? Who else is Luke going to kiss?
Well, yeah, not if you're getting a Barbie. Who else is Luke going to kiss? You're exactly right.
Well, at the time, you know, I didn't know any better. Nobody did.
Luckily, your sister did.
Hello. So, all right. Well, why don't we get into talking about Blitzkrieg Blitzkrieg Button here for this week? I thought this was an interesting episode. As I was telling you before the show, I was really engrossed in the episode as it was airing, and when it was done, I kind of looked at, you know, kind of just turned back to myself and was like, what did we do this week? Like, what really happened in the episode?
Where did we go? I think this was the mid-season character development episode, so they could you could learn a little bit more about Peggy and Howard's relationship, I think.
Yeah. I think we've got some great character building for Peggy, for Howard, for Thompson. Even Dooley and Sousa, you know, were represented there. I still would like to see more Jarvis. How do I want to put this? I don't know if Jarvis is still lying to people. So this episode we saw Jarvis really has a horrible, horrible tell, like when he plays poker. And that's he very blatantly rubs his ear every time he's lying, which...
It's interesting because did he do that when they were interrogating him about whoever?
No, he was just really upset, and that is kind of weird to me because this, you know, it was so blatant and obvious, and B, he's been deceitful before. I mean, his pretense of getting Peggy to help, based on Howard Carter's. Howard Stark's, what is this, like, Tutankhamun? On Howard Stark's, you know, wanting her to help, but why does he want her to help? Well, I think we found out why Howard wants to help, wants, you know, Peggy involved in this.
Well, I kind of had my theory about Jarvis's tell in
your
this
hypothesis?
One, you know? Yeah, my hypothesis. Yeah, I said theory, didn't I? Sorry. I have
a
prediction.
I can't not do that now. I apologize.
You should. I'm a science teacher. I ought to know better. please point that out when I screw up. But anyway, okay. No, I had an idea. Now, first of all, going back to the interrogation when he was at SSR and they were questioning him about...
Right, that was last episode, I believe. No, two episodes ago.
No, I think it was.
No, that was last
episode.
Right.
Yeah. It was 2 weeks ago. But
2 weeks ago, right.
A lot of the things they were asking him about, he wasn't lying about. You know, he wasn't necessarily giving them all the information. You know, they were asking him about his time in the war and his discharge and his wife. And so he wasn't necessarily lying about that stuff. He just wasn't forthcoming with all the information. And the other thing I thought about was as he was doing this, you know, to Carter, I don't know. And I could be wrong about this, but I don't know that it was so much about the lying as that he was uncomfortable lying to her because she's put so much trust in him and they have kind of this special bond, this special relationship now. It's like it's more uncomfortable for him, I think. You know, I mean, if you think about telling a little white lie to an acquaintance you have at work compared to, say, lying to your spouse. You know, even if it's the same lie, it's more uncomfortable to somebody that has put their trust in you.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that I was totally at work the entire time. I don't know where that hotel receipt came from. But do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I think maybe for Jarvis, and that's kind of how I took it. I saw somebody kind of not complaining, but, you know, mentioning that it was so obvious online, you know, this week after the episode. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking about it. I'm like, I don't know that it was that much. It was just he was really uncomfortable about doing the whole thing. I don't think he liked it. I don't think he wanted to do it. And I think he kind of he kind of held it against Howard a little bit for him do it.
What was the line? Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely the right track that you're on because when Howard's at the shoeshine stand and Jarvis sits down and says something along the lines of, you know, he's covered up for him a lot or he's been rebuked by people who say things about Stark before, but this one really stung.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think you're right. He feels a kinship or a strong respect for what Agent Carter's doing. And you know, we've seen a lot more that she's gone through, right? She faces problems at work due to the fact that she's a woman, you know, and that is a huge barrier for her, you know, and there was a lot of discussion of different kinds of barriers and stuff like this. It may not also help that she's a foreigner in America at this time. I mean, I know the Britons were allies and everything like that, but you know, you stand out as that kind of person. And Jarvis also being British, you know, I think there's just a shared experience there. And he, like you said, he really respects her. And then to have to lie to her and put her in these positions is just, it's not comfortable for him. Which is interesting because after all the supposed lying and covering up he's had to do for Howard over the years that has been intimated over the four episodes here, this is what really sticks in his craw.
Speaking of Jarvis, do you, just out of curiosity, when you are watching this character on this show, do you ever make the connection to Tony's Jarvis with this Jarvis? Does it seem like almost like the same character that has like evolved throughout the ages?
Intellectually, I do. I know that this is probably Tony's Jarvis is like his version of who he, you know,
right.
knew as Jarvis the butler here.
Well, the reason it kind of popped in my head was things like this, because Jarvis, he really kind of was not trained and ready. He just wasn't prepared for the humongous responsibility of it all, I think, of doing the things that Carter has been doing or having him do. And it's interesting. He's been drawing
all sorts of things that he...
Oh, right. But he's getting good at it. You know what I mean? And I think he kind of likes it. But I think he's getting really good at it. And I just, in my head, I can see this evolution of him as a character. And then I thought, well, geez, you know, what would he be like? 70 years later, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And it almost is kind of like that computer that cares for Tony and is there for him and really knowledgeable about this kind of stuff and what needs to be done because he's had so much experience. I know that's not really what it's supposed to be necessarily, but
right.
it just makes me think of it when I see him.
It was interesting. There was an interview with James Darcy over the last week, and they were asking about that. They said, Have you listened to Paul Bettany's performance as Jarvis in the Iron Man and Avengers movies? And he said, no, I don't really pay attention to that because I came first, so he should be copying me. And then they asked, there was some other question about that. And it's, you know, like, do you think it's a direct offshoot of Jarvis the Butler that you're playing? And he said, no, I think it, like, kind of like what I just said, is that James Darcy feels that Tony grew up knowing about Jarvis, so he took Tony took his interpretation of the way Jarvis behaved, because obviously it's not like they digitized Jarvis, you know, or had anything like that. I mean, presumably it's just,
right. Yeah. I don't think they did.
Tony programmed a computer to act like what he thought Jarvis was like and to prompt him and do things in a certain way. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah. I didn't think that they had digitized Jarvis, but I like the idea that he kind of came. It's almost like he's related to Jarvis, you know, in kind of a surreal way.
It is. I mean, and it's a great parallel that each Stark has a Jarvis that helps them out, and you know, is
Jarvis
of the time, right? So
I need a Jarvis, man. I got to check Craigslist.
That could be dangerous. So, Yeah, so, you know, that's cool. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more, but I think since Howard was back this week, that really put the limelight on his character. So Peggy this week, let's talk a little bit about her. She, I think, comes to a real sudden realization that not a man around is going to help her. She thinks that Howard is there, you know, kind of on her side, and she finds out that, like, she can't even trust this person that she thought was her friend. And but the biggest, and I don't want to say bust for her, it's just because I don't think she ever had any sense that anybody at the job at SSR was, you know, backing her up. But Thompson comes right out, you know, and tells her, it's like, you know what, you're a woman, you're not going anywhere with this. It's just, that's the way it is. And what I think the most heartbreaking part of that, because, I mean, that really affects her, but the worst part that I think is that he's not really being mean about it. He is just stating a fact that that's the way the world is working right now. And it's, you know, we've seen that for the previous episodes, but just to have this character come out and state that, it's a big realization, I think, for the character of Peggy Carter.
It is. And I think it was a realization because he wasn't being a jerk about it. He really was just kind of stating it as matter of fact. I mean, wasn't very chivalrous, I'll say that, but...
Well, I mean, he's an ass in general, right?
Absolutely.
And we saw that with his interrogation.
he's been promoted from major ass to ass in general.
Ass in general. Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, you start with him, you know, bossing everybody around, and who was it? I think it was Sousa mentioned something about the way he fought in the war. And, you know, he was, again, he's very matter of fact. He said he just did what he had to do, you know, in terms of, I guess, killing people or, you know, whatever it was he was doing in the war. But if you're not equal to him, and I don't know if that means a white male or if it means, you know, someone as smart and capable as him, because I mean he is relatively smart. I mean, it's not like Krasinski or something like that.
No, I think it's more of a sign of the times. You know, I mean, it's a very, I almost want to say like a self-centered kind of attitude that he has. You know, he knows he's good, and he knows he's better than a lot of people, and he acts like it. You know, he's not humble in any way.
Right. Okay, that's good. Yes, he is not humble. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you've got Sousa talking about his experiences with the public's guilt, basically, over the fact that he came back as a wounded vet. And, you know, Thompson's like, you know, now that Krasinski's gone, you're our big yo-yo here. It's like, I mean, not even just like, as an aside, like in front of the entire office, is that really a sign of the times, or is he really just completely out of, I don't even know what I would want to say. I mean, cause I can't relate to it, I guess, because it is different than I would expect people to be acting nowadays, but.
Yeah, oh, yeah, completely.
I mean,
completely.
I don't know what it was like back in the
40s. And that's kind of what I mean by a sign of the times, you know. I mean, it was people just kind of – that was the common feeling that minorities weren't as good, that, you know, that there was this gigantic gender gap. And it was just sort of, you know, taken as is, you know. And so, yeah, I don't know, because you say, you know, he wasn't being mean, but is he really a jerk? I mean, is he?
I mean, I don't think he was being mean to Carter, but.
No, but it came across like that, and it came across like that to Sousa, too. So
I think he was being mean to Sousa, though. I mean, Krasmensky would belittle Sousa about his injury, you know, right in front of people, like, because he just wants to goof with them, I thought. I mean, that's the way I kind of took it. I mean, that, and that he was an ass also. But Thompson, there was a moment where I thought he was caring enough. And again, he was stating some plain facts to Sousa. He said, you know, not everybody came back from the war wanting a hug. It's like, that's kind of a backhanded compliment, maybe. You know, it's like he's pointing out the way this hobo behaved, you know, in the way that he saw the world work, where Sousa's trying to go for the feels, you know, and everything like that. But he also asked Sousa where he got his leg, right? I think that was what he had asked, and Sousa shot back with some really harsh quip, and I couldn't tell if Thompson was being serious or if he was trying to set him up for another joke, or maybe Sousa was just kind of pissed because he was basically pointing out the deformity, you know, his disability. I don't know. Do you have a take on that scene? It was the post interrogation scene.
You know, maybe this doesn't answer the question, but it almost seems like they both have a similar attitude in that, you know, Sousa kind of thinks, look, if I deal with this homeless guy in a kind and caring way, like I would want to be dealt with, you know, everybody could have this kind of attitude where we're supportive and positive to each other. Whereas, so he says, you know, people feel like me. Whereas Thompson says, no, you know what? People feel like me. It's kind of about me. I got to look out for myself. I just do what I got to do.
Okay, well, let me dissect that for 1 second. So, do you really think Sousa would want to be treated in that kind of kid gloves, touchy-feely way?
No, I don't think it's that so much, but I think he wants people to be sympathetic to his plight. I think he wants people to understand and not ridicule him for it, mm-hmm. which I think Thompson was doing. Not to be mean, just because that's kind of how it is.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think he needs to be all touchy-feely, but I also don't think he wants to be pointed out in a negative way.
The other thing that what you said made me think is that Thompson really – he seems to know how the world works. And regardless of what's fair, what's right, he's not making a moral judgment on it, but he is working the system. He's like, Peggy – this is just how it is. He's like, Sousa, you can't talk to this guy. He doesn't want a hug. He just wants this booze and this burger. It's, you know, and maybe that's what it is. It's just that he sees the world how it is, and he lives within that, with probably without wanting to change it, whereas you have these other characters that are not within that time. Sousa, because of his injury, he's beneath everybody else. Peggy is beneath everybody else. Howard still thinks he is less than a lot of other people, given his little speech. So
Howard thinks he's less, or he thinks people look at him as less?
I think people look at him as less. Well, he's – no, I take that back. I think Howard – because of his upbringing, because he was poor and he had to work hard to get where he is. And, you know, what do they say? He's a millionaire at this point, which would be like a bajillionaire in the 40s.
I think there's like the bajillion dollars is what Powerball is this week. So
I think it's like a Brazilian. So, but because of his upbringing, you know, he was always very defensive about his family status. That was what I got from him, you know, that his dad sold fruit, his mom worked at this shirtwaist factory, and, you know, he kind of had to work for everything he got, and he lied about stuff. So his first reaction, which is, you know, and I think a lot of people, I think if you if you talk to people, or if you know you look at some of the ways that you might react when people talk about certain things that are painful memories from your upbringing, it comes out in weird ways as adults, you know, depending on what happened to you, you know, whether it was, you know, you were just poor and you were upset that you were poor, or, you know, it's because of abuse or
microwave pizza.
Yes. Even microwave pizza, Josh.
That brings back horrible memories. Remember when that first came out? Oh,
you have to wait 2 minutes for it to cool before you take that bite.
Sponge with sauce. All right.
Volcano on the outside, icicle in the middle. So I think that his reaction is just to get back into that defensive mode, Howard's is. And so, you know, then that's the thing. You've got these characters that are all not the norm, right? They're all characters that have damage in some way or are second class, I guess, right? The poor,
yeah.
Women,
yeah.
Disabled. So Thompson...
English.
English. Thompson... Sorry, all you Brits.
But no, Thompson, no, I'm from their point of view, not mine.
No, right, I know. So, and Thompson represents, let's say, the status quo then. And like I said, he's, you know, maybe he's reacting as this is the way the world works, and there's no reason for me to change it. And I think he might even be, give stuff lip service, you know, and say, I'm sorry, this is the way it works, but... You know, that's what it is.
But hey, you know, you got your place in life. That's
yeah, right. And maybe, you know, I mean, they don't really get into that. But in other period pieces like this, you know, you have people talking about stations, right? It's like, you know, if you're born to royalty, you know, you don't consort with commoners, and everybody needs to know their place. I just watched Snowpiercer too, so that's really. That whole classist system is really fresh in my mind here as well. Also, did you catch that Thompson called Peggy Marge when he asked her for the hey Margie for the order? Do you know why? I thought he was just making up a name at first, and then
okay.
I realized that there was more to it than that.
Now it did throw me for a second, but I did put it together. Marge. Mm-hmm. Like Peggy mm-hmm. is a nickname for Margaret, which is Agent Carter's name.
Very good. And that always has thrown me, too. It's like, how do you get Peggy from Margaret? But, hey, I don't know how you get Josh from Joshua, so I don't whatever. So, okay, anything else about Thompson you wanted to throw in there? Is that, do you think we... thoroughly dressed him down?
It is an interesting character, though.
He's getting
like
more
variety. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And then, as I mentioned earlier, so Agent Seuss is getting pretty close to discovering who Peggy is. And we got a little bit more of his backstory. Now, you were saying you wouldn't mind him finding out that Peggy... was the one that was the blonde at the whatever the Humperdinck Club. What was it called? The whatever the club was.
No, it was. Oh, dang.
Sorry, man.
It's Martinique.
The Martinique Club. Thank you.
Right.
So what are your thoughts about why do you think that?
Why do I think
that he would, that would be okay for him to find, or that you would want him to find out?
That it would be okay. Well,
Or
I think he'd make a good sidekick.
Oh, okay.
And I don't mean that in a.
Is that because when you kick him, he goes to the side? That's terrible, man. He's crippled.
No, I don't mean that in a second class kind of way. I mean he would be a good ally for her, and he's clearly a man of strong morals and ethics. So I think he would be very a good ally for her to have kind of on the inside of SSR.
He seems to be. He's also quick with a crutch, man. He can whoop a drunk hobo's ass with a crutch. I'd like to see him go up against
that's more than me.
Hydra, yeah. But do you think he really just needs a hug, or that he really wants a hug? Because he too seems to have this kind of defensive wall up about, like, he doesn't want people talking about his injury, and he is quick to jump to other people's defense. See the first episode when he stepped in for Peggy being confronted or whatever, teased by Chris Menske in the first staff meeting. And she's like, I wish you hadn't done that. I really don't want you standing up for me. Is that just his insecurity, you think?
Standing up for her?
Well, just jumping to other people's defense. He's not defending the primary citizens, right? Like, there's, like, Thompson, right? He sees Thompson and Dooley, probably, and Chris Menske as, like, oppressors. But, you know, he wants to get the respect of other people that he sees at his level, you know, this veteran, this hobo, Peggy. And so he's quick to kind of, you know, step to their aid. But he doesn't seem to know how to go about doing that properly. Nobody else really wants his help. I mean, Thompson doesn't want his help, makes fun of him for, you know, actually doing some detecting. Peggy doesn't really seem to want his help. And, of course, she probably understands that because he has those photos, he's in danger of figuring out who she is. The hobo doesn't want his help.
So that's like his fatal flaw, huh? Like his just
his character flaw.
His character flaw that he tries to come to the aid of people even when they don't want it.
Worst superhero ever.
I think that's probably something he'll have to work out. I don't think that's a bad flaw. You know, the one lesson I think that people like that need to learn is when to let people fail on their own or learn from mistakes, you know, and letting them fail. I mean, that's a hard lesson even as a parent, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's a primary lesson as a parent. You know, I mean, it's tough, but there are those times that you need to let your kids fail, and you just hope to – it's not, you know, when they decide they want to fly out of window or something like that. So,
yeah. Or you can just push them.
Been there, done that, huh?
Yes. So, anyway, yeah, but I he's a good guy. And I think, see, the thing about that is he's got flaws, even as a guy with ethics. And I'm not talking about his leg in any way. That's not his flaw to me. You know, his flaws is not knowing when to do that kind of stuff. And that makes him an interesting character to me, and that's why I think he would be a good kind of match for Peggy there, is they can work that out, just like Jarvis has had flaws, and he's learning as he goes.
Yeah.
So again, another interesting character on this show that they need to give more action or a quicker pace to.
Mm-hmm. There is definitely no perfect character on this show. I mean, from a, you know, like, can do no wrong. We've seen everybody has missteps. I really just think Seuss's biggest thing is he needs to know when to change his tactics. It was really kind of painful for me to watch Sousa doing the interrogation because, you know, the guy at the dock said, I don't talk to cops. And then Sousa asked nicely again, you know, please. And he's like, I don't talk to cops. And they bring him in. And he's like, that's really great and all, but I don't talk to cops. And so Sousa just keeps, well, you know, let me try this. It's like, I mean, how many times do you have to be told no? No means no. So.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but in that case, I think they kind of needed him. But, and he did,
he gave Sousa more than, like, you know, everybody else goes, oh, great, you know, that's a lot of good news there. Howard Stark always has women with him, you know. But it gives Sousa what he needs, right? He's like, oh, I wonder what this woman would look like with brunette hair. And he starts coloring in the photograph with his pencil. So it's his puzzle to put together.
This is another display of your awesome intellect here. Do you think he noticed her shoulder? And that's why he started coloring the hair in to see if it was somebody else?
Possibly. I mean, we've seen the shoulder. I can't imagine that he hasn't looked at that photo enough. And that was a slightly different photo than we had seen in a previous episode, I believe. But, he'd be pretty bad at his job if he didn't notice that there were some scars on her shoulder. The one thing that's the saving grace right now is I don't think there's any reason why he would know that Peggy has those scars on her shoulder. And the fact that, you know, characters are, you know, all the women characters, oh, and even all the men too, everybody is, you know, very dressed all the time. There is, you know, it's the 40s. It's, you know, there's not a lot of skin showing. Even I was noticing Dottie, you know, she's wearing long skirts and sweaters and everything like that. So I'm really curious as to how we're going to get this piece of flesh revealed, because that's, you know, quite a sensitive area. It's not like she'd be going, it's not like Carter's going to go around wearing a strapless dress, you know, in at work or anything like that, right? I mean, for parties and stuff, obviously there is the ability for people to do that, but I don't know. So
yeah, maybe, or she might there's ways they could do that, but I almost get the impression that he already knows about that somehow.
Okay. Well, that'll be interesting to see.
But we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll see what goes on with that. Okay, so Howard Carter, he is, I have written here in my notes that he's just a big dick. And I really don't know how else to put it. He's a real jerk. And he's a chauvinist. And It's interesting that for as much as presumably Peggy knows about him, she has gone as along with him as far as she has. I almost felt that they took him too far and made him more of a caricature, because
I mean, like when he's going in and out of the apartments, that kind
of
thing?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, we can't find him. And he comes out of the apartment and there's lipstick all over him. And then she can't find him the next day. And she's like, where are you? And I'm like, oh, my God, would you stop screaming for Howard in your all women's? You know, it's like, how many people know about him except for Miriam, which he seems to know Miriam. So I think that would be interesting to see the two of them get together. Maybe that was a woman that he was with. Maybe that's why she hates men. Because Howard put her on that path. But he's been lying to Peggy this whole time. I think that there was the little the phone call that Jarvis was making with Howard at the end of the first episode, the first hour of the first episode, the two-parter, about it seemed like they were hiding something from Peggy about what this mission was about. And I think this entire, hey, you got to help get all of my toys back, boils down to him just really wanting to get this vial of Steve's blood back. Like, he didn't, I mean, he probably did care a little bit, but he didn't really need to get any of that other stuff back. But that's the one thing that he wanted. Do you agree with that, or is that just something that's kind of popped up for this episode?
Yes to both of those. I mean, it was a very convenient plot point that they put in, but I think I don't even know what they would do with it. She hid the thing in her wall.
Right.
And he didn't even, now I was kind of a little bit curious about that, because first he has her take pictures of what they have.
Right.
So he can find out.
Wants to know, do they have everything or were they missing stuff?
Well, is that really what he wanted to know? Or do you think he was looking for this?
I think probably the latter, but you know, he may have a little bit of a conscience when it comes to other devices. You know, like, I mean, obviously some of these devices are pretty dangerous. Like, what is this one with the button that you push it and it just sends a shock up your arm? The fact that the guy keeps doing the same task over and over again, and then the other guys keep burning their arms with different colored flames. You know, these are supposedly SSR's brightest, right? I mean, this is the scientific strategic reserve, and they can't figure out Howard's stuff. I don't know. I think primarily he probably was looking to see if they had this this vial, but I don't know. I feel I want to say that he is concerned enough about the other weapons falling into the wrong hands.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. So, again, it just seemed like they had this particular one to make it, you know, to do work on the character development, and that you could find out kind of how Howard's dealing with Peggy and well, I was going to say the other thing with the, what was his name, Mr. Mink?
Yes.
The blonde guy?
Yeah.
But that was almost a completely separate issue.
Mink was just a guy that was smuggling Howard back to the States, and then he just wanted to go investigate who beat up his men. So, I mean, that it's kind of weird because it seems like, oh, wow, so there's this other guy that's kind of a bad guy. But I think he was just – he was a convenient character. They didn't have to create two characters, right? He could be the guy that helped smuggle Howard back in, and then he could be the person that reveals Dottie to us. And then they get rid of him, right, so that we don't have to, you know, it's not just floating around or whatever.
No loose ends.
Right. Right. I mean, just brevity of scripting, I guess, or character use or something like that. Because you don't, I mean, like I said, you don't have to create another character that then, just to get killed. I mean, they created this character to get killed, but Mink was also there to serve a purpose at the beginning, though. It's all really kind of tenuous, I think. I enjoyed Peggy's outrage. Totally well-deserved. I mean, I love that they go to commercial basically on him getting socked in the face. That was a great... I mean, it was literally punch to commercial. So...
That whole scene, I'm going, would you please be quiet? You're going to get caught. They were so loud.
Yeah, they were very loud. I mean, she is on the third floor, and I'm assuming Miriam has a room downstairs or whatever, but I don't know. I would like to know just a little bit more about Miriam, because she's so just, the character is so specific in, you know, she's talking about id and ego and young ladies can't control their urges or whatever it is. And it's like, I seriously think it's going to come out that Howard wronged her in some fashion, and and Peggy's going to be pissed at Howard for yet something else.
Wow. Howard really does get around, doesn't he?
I mean, he does. Well, and he's talking about, well, the only people that know about, his secret penthouse are, well, Lana Turner and Betty Grable. You know, it's just like, he starts listing up all these famous Hollywood starlets and stuff. He's bad news, man. I mean, I think he might be worse than Tony, to a degree. I mean, Tony's kind of a jerk, but I think he actually makes some real connections. I'm not sure that Howard really has a real connection.
Yeah, you're right. I think they did kind of make him that caricature, but it didn't bother me too much, just based on the amount we've seen him in this series so far. I mean, it hasn't really all been that much except for this episode, but even here, he couldn't really be a part of the action because he was in hiding. So,
right.
So, you know, and it kind of fit, and it really did illustrate what kind of a person he was. But, I just, man, I tell you, sometimes, you know, even though you don't look up to those people, you still get a little jealous.
I mean, jealous of
Howard.
Oh,
like, oh yeah, that was never me. Not even close.
Everything just comes so easy to him.
Oh yeah.
Do you think that Peggy has him pegged properly about kind of his ulterior motives? That, you know, he's saying he wanted the Steve's blood because it can serve as a way to fight the common cold and do all these other altruistic things. And she's like, yeah, you're just going to make money.
No, I think he would have told her if that was really the case. I think there's something else. And I don't think it's just making money either. I think there's something else. I don't know what it could be, but...
Do you think maybe he's trying to resurrect the Super Soldier program?
Could be. Yeah. I mean, that's possible. That seems like that's even what the government would want it for.
Yeah, obviously the government's been doing some work on this and are almost out of their 11 vials of blood.
Yeah, and what have they been doing with it? So,
yeah, that's true. We don't know. Okay, well, not trying to draw a comparison between these two things. This is just kind of the order that my notes are, but I think we might invite comparison here. In the discussion of what happened with the German when Dooley went over to Nuremberg to talk to this, was he general? I think he was, the Nazi general.
Yeah, I think so.
He was talking about, Dooley wanted to find out what happened at the Battle of Finau, because Finau was where supposedly the two men with no voice boxes, Leap Brannis and the other guy, they supposedly died there, yet they were running around New York City here in 1946. So the German says, well, there was a number of Russians that were killed there. It was actually more of a massacre, but it wasn't done by any Germans. And I think he brings up the fact that there were bodies that were ripped apart. I mean, he actually, you know, he uses the term massacre in the literal sense of massacre, I guess. And then we find out that from Thompson, from pulling records about the Battle of Finau, or about Finau, which, you know what, I forgot to even look that up. I have no idea where this is. I'm thinking it's like in Poland or something like that, but I don't know. Maybe it's in Russia. Stark lands on a passenger plane with a number of other people. The other names on the list didn't seem to be anybody. I think it was just members of the cast and crew, or the crew, that were listed on the as the other names, but Howard Stark's name stood out on there. So I'm just wondering if, did you have any thoughts, anything you can think about on there? Maybe some Inhumans or super soldiers or some other strange experiment that might be going on?
I don't know who it could be. I like that Inhumans idea. That's interesting. That would certainly tie it into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as we know.
Which it doesn't seem like they're doing for the most part, but it would be an interesting tie-in if they did bring that.
Right. But and my other thought was something about Hydra specifically, because, you know, as we've seen, Hydra wasn't always necessarily doing Nazi work. They were often doing things on their own, you know, so it could be something that had to do with Hydra or another group like Hydra that...
Well, we've got Leviathan.
Leviathan, exactly.
We've talked about that. They haven't really... They didn't bring up anything about the group this week, other than the typewriter started typing a message at the end.
Yeah, apparently they didn't get the memo that other guy had died, huh? Or maybe they're doing it on purpose.
Right. I was going to say, maybe... So that's those are the two things. One is it a message back to the one hitman with some other information? Because, there was speculation by Thompson, I think it was at the beginning of this episode. He's like, did you figure out where, you know, that is transmitting from? Or no, maybe it was in the scenes from the previous week or earlier. He's like, maybe it's transmitting from Russia. Like, could it transmit from Russia? They didn't know. Like you said, maybe they're doing it on purpose. Maybe it's a message to the SSR, and it, you know, it's going to be like, please meet us at, you know, Mickey's bar. would like to get drink. Stop. I don't know.
Well, yeah, they could be. I don't know how would they be able. They wouldn't be able to transmit from Russia back then, would they? I mean, there's no satellites to bounce it off of. I wonder how that would work.
They've got a typewriter, Josh, that types by itself.
Good point.
And, you know. So, yes, I don't know.
Maybe there's an iPhone that's acting as a hub or something. Yeah. Just something, I don't know.
It's being transmitted to the future and then back. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I would like to just sit here and talk about speculation a little bit more on this, but just not enough information. So, but I hope I feel like they're progressing stuff from week to week.
Right.
But kind of like with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. last season, it's a different feel. It's just slow.
It is a little bit slower pace, I got to admit. It started off promising as with the pace. You know, the first two episodes, I thought, went pretty well. It looked like they were going to use the tech, you know, and do that. But this one seemed like character development. I hope that the last four episodes just kind of go at a real quick pace that you never know what's going to happen from scene to scene. And, you know, we've got these good characters now. We have enough background information on them and feeling of them for an 8-episode series that we could do some fun stuff with them. So I hope they do that. I don't know where they're going to go, because we seem to have quite a few loose ends, lightly knotted. I won't say tied up. You know, I mean, there's possibilities there, but they don't seem to have much future in the rest of the episodes. Mm-hmm. So let's do it, because I like the characters, I like the story, I like the era.
Well, and we get Howling Commandos next week. We saw that in the preview, so that's
promising. That's a good start.
Yep, I think that's a good sign. I just want them to move into this. And, okay, the one thing we haven't discussed is what I think was the coolest reveal, and that's Dottie is a stone cold killer, and she also wants a pickle pocket for her purse.
And proving once again that you have amazing insight and cunning when it comes to finding out the clues to find out what's happening.
I got
to
tell you, it's kind of a coincidence, but it just so happens I've decided to go back and just basically start rereading all the original Marvel comics. I've been reading all the original Fantastic Four comics. I've been reading through the early, you know, first couple dozen Avengers, early X-Men and stuff like that. And that's where all this stuff has been set up. I mean, from 1961 through 1965, I think the majority of these characters that we have in these movies have been introduced. You know, Iron Man and Captain America and the Fantastic Four and, you know, Agent Carter and Nick Fury, and just all this stuff is in there. Black Widow. So, so Dottie appears to be part of the Black Widow program. And just yesterday, before we recorded this podcast, the showrunners actually came out and said that, yes, that is the case. She is an early member of the Black Widow program, there's been intimation about this program from Scarlett Johansson's character in the films. And I think we're going to get a little bit more of that in the next episode based on, again, some stuff in the trailer. So that is pretty cool. We don't have particular confirmation that she was the one that killed Krasinski, but I think, I mean, you would agree, right, that we can just intimate that that is exactly what happened.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you had me convinced at your screenshot when you saw the gun firing and her hair sticking out of the hat. I was convinced back then.
Yeah, if you guys didn't see the screenshot I posted on our Facebook page, I was able to find a frame where when the gun was fired, it illuminated the actor, and it's pretty clear that that was a female gun person, gun woman.
Gun person.
Mall, I guess. So my question to you is her wanting the pickle pocket in her purse. I know that seems really funny, but her character in this episode is a little off. Like, she sees this gun and she wants it. And she, like, I see something in her brain just, like, snap. And then she goes and kills Mink. Do you think she wants a pickle pocket because she wants to put something that is pickle-sized in her purse. And if so, what might that be? She didn't come there just to kill Krasmensky.
Well, no. No, no. Otherwise, why would she be in the apartment with Peggy?
Right. So what...
I mean, I don't think that's a coincidence.
What else is pickle-sized? That got...
Dude, I don't have to answer that, do I?
It got hidden in a wall.
Ah. Oh.
So somehow, the Russians or Leviathan know about Stark's... Stark has Steve Rogers' blood.
Ah.
And they want to get the sample.
Wow, you really think she would get that close to Peggy because she thinks Peggy would end up with the blood? Because she went there well before Peggy even knew about this thing she was supposed to be looking for.
I don't know.
I could see that happening because they may suspect or even know. Wait, no, but listen, they may suspect or even know for sure that Peggy's been working with Howard. So why not? Why not follow her? She could lead them right to Howard, who could lead them to this vial if that's what they're looking for. So Right. Yeah, sure, why not? That makes a lot of sense, actually, once I kind of sit down and piece it all together.
And what if the vial never gets out of the wall? What if it's still there in 2015?
Yeah, I thought of that, too.
And the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. have to, you know, all of a sudden find the report that Peggy wrote that says, oh, and by the way, I hit Steve Rogers' blood and, you know, non-refrigerated in the wall of my apartment. So I'm sure after 70, 80 years, whatever it is, it'll be okay. So I don't know. Anyway, I thought
super
it was great
blood.
I thought it was great that she pulled the, she pretty much pulled the same move in the hallway that Scarlett Johansson did in Iron Man 2. It wasn't exactly the same. I rewatched the scene from
yeah,
Iron Man 2.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson wasn't wearing a 40s skirt.
Yeah. She moved pretty well for being in the period clothes, I will say. So.
For sure.
And then, oh, yeah, and then you just you added here, I see, that not to forget to mention that Stan the Man Lee was getting a shoe shine.
He was. Excelsior!
Now, he asked for the sports section from Howard.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they have him ask for the comics section? Wouldn't that have been more appropriate?
The comic section had the wrong date on it, I think. No, you're right. I agree with you. That would have been funnier, actually.
I think it would have been much more meta for what they were trying to do. And, you know, I mean, it's great they have Stan showing up in these episodes and stuff like that. It's, I mean, boy, he's getting old.
Yeah, it's great that Stan can show up anywhere.
Yeah. I think he's 90 now.
I do too, yeah. I think he just turned 90. Yeah, but, that was a cool scene. I like that they got that in there. So
yeah, and again, to have him in the S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes and stuff like this, which is something that he, you know, was directly responsible for. I mean, I always like it when he gets to be in the shows or the movies of the characters that he created himself. He's worked on pretty much every character. I mean, of course, because he was editor and publisher for such a long time, or editor in chief and writers for all these. So, but he didn't create every character. I mean, there, you know, like the Guardians of the Galaxy, there, a lot of those characters he didn't have a hand in. But you know, Captain America, Peggy Carter, Nick Fury, those are all people that he helped, you know, write and create. So, I think that's really cool
that they
put him in there. I know a lot of people think it's kind of cheesy, but I don't know. I think it's a nice homage.
Well, comic stories in general are cheesy, and there's nothing wrong with that either. So,
especially the ones in the '60s. That is one thing I will tell you from reading all these. They you have to have a special tolerance to be able to read these. You can't go, oh my God, I can't believe they did that or said that. But they're a product of their time, and actually for the time they were really cutting edge. So
yeah, well, tolerant, or you know, have a special nostalgic love for that era.
Yeah,
either one works.
All right, well, thanks for talking to me again this week, and that's all that we've got for this week's episode of Agent Carter S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
And hey, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes just right now. That would be great. Just pop off right out there and get on iTunes and give us a bunch of stars and a quick positive comment. We would love that. Also, if you want to contact us, you can contact us at email. Just go to shield@randomchatter.com. Shoot us an email about either Agent Carter or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That would be wonderful. Our Twitter is @AgentsPodcast, and our Facebook page is facebook.com/AgentsPodcast.
And you can also check out the other podcasts that Josh and I do here on randomchatter.com, Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. All shows are also available in the iTunes Store, as Josh mentioned there, and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. We like getting new listeners. We like getting new likes on our Facebook page. We like hearing from new voices. So that's the best way. Feel free to post about us on your blog or, you know, share us with your friends at work or anybody else that you talk to. Just write,
Comic book store.
Comic book stores are great, you know, just to go, you know, for no reason, just go, hey, you know, I've listened to these guys that do Agent Carter S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast and Green Justice and all this kind of stuff. And
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. So anyway, for Agent Carter of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Until next week, bidding you adios, a Wiedersehen, aloha.
This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agent Carter can be found at abc.go.com. Agent Carter and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.